Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. It's Sunday, November 15th, 2009. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 12. I'm starting out myself like normal today, instead of having Rodney start, since he did such a terrible job last time. He's here with me, by the way.
In the famous words of Leo Laporte, screw you.
Oh, yeah, before we even get started. On my case already. Well, we've got a variety of things going on today. I heard some comments from some of you that you would love for me to continue covering some science news. So I have a couple science stories. And we also have some new products out, assistive technology products out. I guess now it's time for the holidays, so they're planning to put some new stuff out. And then stories that run the gamut from, you know, Facebook to Windows 7 to Google. But I think we get out of this podcast without mentioning Twitter.
We'll see.
Unless you have something that you found that talks about Twitter.
You never know. It may come up.
That's true. Well, I'll start off today with talking about a couple of little science news pieces. They both have to do with NASA. NASA, as we all know, has two rover robots up on Mars, examining the terrain and collecting samples and that kind of thing. They're called Spirit and Opportunity. And one of them, Spirit, got stuck in a crater last April. They're going to start tomorrow to try and maneuver it out of there. Apparently they launched these in 2004 and they got there and they were only supposed to last 90 days and it's like 5 years later now, so even if it is lost, that's still a good long time to be out there doing its thing.
Sounds like Opportunity needs to go knock on it a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, boy. How funny. I think Opportunity is clearly on the other side of the planet now doing other stuff. But even it, what happened with Spirit is that it was in this, its wheel, one of its wheels stopped working, and so it had trouble steering and navigating a little bit, and in April it was in this crater, or kind of straddling a crater with a crusty surface, and underneath that surface was all this sand, and so it's just gotten mired in sand. And the second NASA news piece is that the moon apparently does have water on it. NASA sent up this L-Cross rocket in October. It hit the moon and ejected a couple of plumes of lunar material from the impact, and they've been analyzing it with the satellite that accompanied the rocket. It sent back some pictures, and they determined, using spectrometers and other such means, that there is indeed water in the rocks of the moon, in the shadowed polar regions where there isn't any sun, and scientists are interested in this, not only for the because of the fact that it's, well, interesting, but also it's proving that the moon was once part of the Earth, and also that perhaps this will serve us later on down the line to figure out how to mine the moon for resources. People have been talking about that, too, for when we start explorations and things.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting when they did this in October, how some press covered it and some did not, and how just people were not as into it as you would think they would be. I guess it shows that times have changed since the landing on the moon in 69.
Yeah, now it's sort of like, ho-hum, you know, we want news about other planets now, not just the moon. And the moon we just seem to think of as sort of there, and that's all, everything's been discovered about the moon that can possibly be discovered, and this is showing us that that's really not the case. Moving on, we don't have a good segue into this, but I do want to talk about some products that are coming out.
Well, one product that's coming out in early December from Logitech is a new USB key that will actually contain a AM/FM transmitter, or transmitter and recorder. The key will be able to do sort of DVR type recordings where you can record a show off the radio. You can break it into segments. You can do scheduled times and things like that. I'm not really sure who would really benefit from this. I'm not sure if people really listen to the radio like they used to. The article from Logitech indicated that it would be a great addition for, say, folks in the BBC England area, because they have the iPlayer that sends out their broadcast radio stations in a similar fashion where you can record and everything. So it could be something that users might find useful.
What's the USB for? I mean,
Storage. There's not really a whole lot listed as far as what capacities the thumb drives will be in, what the price ranges and that kind of stuff is going to be. It's pretty much being kept under wraps for some reason by Logitech.
Well, that's often common with all these products. Perhaps they're waiting until the actual holiday season, a month before traditional, to announce the prices.
Could be.
A lot of products do that. A lot of companies do that.
Yes, they aren't giving us much intel on the subject.
Well, guaranteed, no matter what the price is, guaranteed it's going to be cheaper than this next couple of products that I have to talk about. These are assistive technology products marketed specifically for blind individuals. This first one has a little bit broader range, I suppose. This first one is for people who have reading impairments of any kind, pretty much. It is called the Intel Reader. And I wondered how they could get away with using the name Intel, but it's because it is made by Intel. It is a piece of hardware. It is about $1,300. It's about the size of a paperback book, and it can scan documents. It has a little camera in it to scan documents, and has an OCR engine to convert them into text, and the text output is audio output. You can also send documents to it, but the formats are fairly restricted. I think they can only be in text formats. It does not have native HTML support, and it does not have some other things that comparable devices like the Kindle have, like Wi-Fi, for instance.
I believe it uses a USB cable to transfer data.
Yes. Their marketing, Intel is marketing this for blind individuals. It's very overpriced. $1,300. You could probably build one of these for $400 or $500. And I'm not sure how many people are actually going to think it's worthwhile to spend that much on it. Of course, it is cheaper than things like the KNFB reader, which is something that you need a Nokia phone for, but it does the same similar things. But still, I don't know how big of an audience this will actually get. How many people actually jump on this and think it's wonderful.
Well, I mean, it'll come down to the fact that there's other smaller devices that can do similar things. Not the scanning of menus or book pages or things like that. There's nothing that can compete with that, I don't believe.
No, the KNFB reader does that, but it's a lot more expensive. And you can only have a certain cell phone in order for it to work properly. It only works with Nokia phones, and I think it's in the $2,000 range. There are very mixed responses throughout the blind community about the release of this product.
Yeah, I watched a video on it, and it'll actually play MP3 files, and it will do enlarged text up to a pretty good size, I thought. It's kind of strange. It's a fairly big device. When you look at it, it's a two-hand device where you would definitely want to hold on to it with two hands.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it kind of looked like the old handy cassettes that everybody used from American Printing House, a little bit, but thinner, with buttons on the sides and across the bottom to do different functions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to say. Most likely, phones will start coming out with the technology to do scanning of menus and things like that.
The only thing I can see it really being of a use for. If you had a piece of paper you wanted to scan, or something someone gave you and you wanted to scan it fairly quickly and didn't want to keep it with you, or if it was, you know, something on the fly for scanning things. But at the same time, I still can't see myself paying $1,200 for it just to do that.
You would definitely have to be a traveling person that need something like that, I would think, with Victor Reader Stream and other devices like that. I mean, it's going to read to you for a lot cheaper price.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do that picture taking and
scanning
recognition. Yeah.
HumanWare is distributing this. It's the only distributor I know of at the present moment that distributes this product. It also makes the Victor Reader, incidentally. And another product it is launching at the holiday season, it is the BrailleNote Apex. HumanWare makes the BrailleNote family of note takers. And the Apex is its newest model, I guess, in the evolution of the BrailleNote. It is supposedly sleeker and thinner than other note takers of the same design. Braille notes are similar to Pacmates. It's basically a laptop computer with a Braille display, you know, built into it. They run Windows operating systems usually. I believe the Pacmate runs Windows Mobile. Pacmates by Freedom Scientific. It runs Windows Mobile, and the Braille note runs Windows CE, which I don't think I've ever heard of before.
I think Windows CE was used by Microsoft on devices kind of like a Palm Pilot and little note taker devices back in the day when cell phones couldn't do as much as they do now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's their pre-Windows Mobile technology, I believe.
Yeah, this can also not only, you know, read text files and browse the internet, but it has a built-in MP3 player and stereo speakers you can record. It's got a built-in microphone, rather like a netbook, actually, for a specifically higher sum. You know, it's in the thousands of dollars, while the netbook is a couple of hundred. I've also heard mixed reviews on this, too. I've heard a lot of people say they're perfectly happy with their Braille note, don't feel like this is really a point in upgrading to a newer version of the product. Some people say the Pacmate is actually a better product. I wouldn't know, as I don't have either one. But the thing the Apex they're trying to market about this is that it's supposed to be very lightweight, less than 2 pounds, which for a Braille display is fairly lightweight.
The website shows it as being 31 ounces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only about 7/10 of an inch thick, I believe.
Ooh, get a hold of my Braille light in my room over here. It's about 2 inches thick.
It's basically 9 by 5 mm-hmm. Square or rectangle, I guess that would be.
Yeah, rectangle.
Square.
Mm-hmm. 9 by 5 is a rectangle. Yeah, so, you know, mixed reviews on this too. It'll be interesting to see what, you know, how it's received. I don't know the actual price, as it's not out yet. I don't think they're going to take orders until about December or so for this.
It is kind of interesting, though, that they have built-in Bluetooth and Wi-Fi
mm-hmm.
Grades B and G. They don't have N-capable specs for the wireless
mm-hmm.
connection, and it has one SD card.
Yeah, only so one. That I found strange.
Well, let's see. Some of the key things, one SD card. It has a built-in 100 megabit Ethernet port, Wi-Fi B and G, Bluetooth 2.1, high-speed 2.0 port, and 3 high-speed USB 2 host ports.
Yeah.
Where you could actually send information out from that. I mean, it looks like it could be very useful, but how does it, I guess, because it's got the Braille display, I believe it says it's a 32-cell display. You know
yeah.
more about that.
Yeah, perfect length for me. I have a 40-cell, and it's a little long. 32-cell is about, the width of a piece of paper, regular piece of paper.
Yeah. It's 9 by 5.
Yeah.
So it's 1 inch bigger than a sheet of notebook paper.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Bluetooth is interesting. It almost reads in the description on HumanWare's website like it may be able to interface with cell phones,
mm-hmm.
so that you would actually be able to enter documents and browse your cell phone content from this.
A lot of Braille displays are able to interface with cell phones now. So if it does do that, then it's just, you know, HumanWare's attempt to compete, because a lot of Braille displays can interface yeah. with cell phones.
Okay.
So.
And this and that would be wireless, so that's
yeah.
even a bigger plus.
Oh, definitely. And one thing I do like about this is it has a user replaceable battery. Unlike a lot of these devices that do not, you have to send it in to get their battery replaced. But this, I guess you just open a compartment, take out the battery, and put a new one in, close it back up. So that, to me, is fantastic.
That would definitely be a plan.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of batteries, we have a story about Windows 7's battery life.
Yes, they have started doing their comparisons between Snow Leopard, Windows XP, and Windows 7 in terms of battery life on netbooks, because they are low-powered, small little machines. In the test trial of all three types of operating system, the Windows 7 came in last. All netbooks using the Windows 7 operating system upgrade were seeing a 16.7% decrease in battery life. So, for example, one example they gave was they used a Asus 1008 HA netbook, and the battery life using Windows XP was 50 minutes better than using Windows 7 on that same on that same netbook.
It doesn't seem to make sense to me, because Windows 7 is supposed to be fairly faster with response time. It's supposed to take a lot less memory and a lot fewer resources. So why the discrepancy? Do you know why the difference?
They're only speculating at this point. Microsoft, in their tight-lipped method of doing things, have not really given a lot of information. Guesstimates are that their technology is looking more towards desktops and laptops and really is not utilizing the processor and everything for netbooks. Not sure whether that's going to improve or not.
Well, hopefully they can do something about it.
But since we are talking slowly about Windows 7 and such, how are the Windows 7 and JAWS battles going?
Oh, well, you know, they're going. basically, the information I've been able to glean from talking with people on tech support is that I must just grin and bear all of this trouble, because a lot of updates are coming out from software manufacturers. Windows is releasing its own updates, and it makes changes to the computer that requires the locking code to change, which is the code that JAWS needs to operate by. And if JAWS doesn't recognize this new code, it will no longer operate with, you know, being, will no longer be activated. So, you know, Freedom Scientific is being a little too clever with their DRM protection and not allowing for, I mean, it seems like most hardware and software updates will just throw this out of kilter with Windows 7.
It sounds like that's just a cop-out on their part.
Pretty much.
Updates. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Sit in the corner and not have it connected to the internet?
I know. And I heard something. I'm going to talk with Freedom Scientific about this week. But through the grapevine, I heard that they are only allowing you to call and get your activations reset once every 60 days. So that means you have three activations at a time. You can reset when you have 1 or 0. And if you're someone who installs a lot of hardware, software, and updates Windows regularly, you may have a problem with that. For legitimate users of JAWS, it seems like Freedom Scientific is doing the thing that most companies do to protect against piracy. It's always the honest people that get hurt.
Yeah, they just are. It seems like they're trying to lock down to prevent piracy, but like you say, the only thing it does is hurts the actual legitimate users that need to use this on a daily basis. And when you have to sit there and wait for tech support to say, okay, what's your locking code? Okay, let's go through the steps to reset it. I mean, that takes time, and time is usually valuable.
Yeah, and if you install lots of software, you burn through these activations. Oops, are you out of luck for another month? Do you just have to go on using a demo version for the next month? So that's something that needs to be resolved.
Yeah, I mean, we installed Windows 7 about 3 weeks ago, I think it was, and you've already burned through at least
four activations,
if not five. So, I mean, 60 days is going to be just a little bit ridiculous. And if they don't handle that quite right, they may end up losing customers.
I know.
Which is hard to say. I mean, like you've been using JAWS for
15 years. Switching from Windows to Apple.
Apple has announced that in the coming year, they're going to open 50 new stores across the United States. Evidently, Mac sales are rising and profits are growing, and they feel that they can expand on their empire.
They're also opening a lot overseas, too. I think there's going to be some in China opening, for instance, and in other places in Europe, too. I have to admit, when they started out with the store, I was sort of skeptical about the whole thing, but it seems to be working.
Well, Dell tried stores, dreaded Cal Computers, otherwise known as Gateway, tried stores, and that just didn't work. I guess the Apple experience is a lot better and exciting. I mean, must be, because Microsoft has pretty much copied the formula for their new Microsoft stores out on the West Coast.
Oh, I didn't know they had new stores out there.
Yes, they have two, I believe. One in California and one in Arizona at the moment. And reports are that everything is pretty much identical to the Apple stores.
Mm-hmm.
So the jokes have been, pardon me, but where can I find my iMac and iPod cables? Aren't you an Apple store?
Whoops, I must have gone in the wrong store.
Evidently, it's a formula that's working.
Evidently.
Their stock is going through the roof.
Yep, seems to be.
Which also makes them targets for advertising campaigns, which Verizon has gone on the warpath with their attacks on the map for this in terms of AT&T's 3G coverage in the United States being so slack.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon pops up a 3G coverage map that shows Verizon pretty much has almost all of the United States covered in red, and then they show a screen of AT&T and it's like little blue dots all over the place. And AT&T hasn't been really happy with this because it sort of gives consumers the impression that, why go with AT&T? They have no coverage. But Verizon is saying, well, we're only pointing out that it's 3G coverage.
But the commercial doesn't seem to indicate that. At least the earlier ones didn't. Now I think Verizon has somewhat moderated their approach. They've got some fine print that says, oh, wait, this is only about 3G coverage. But that fundamental picture is still the same. So the 3G distinction might still get lost on a lot of people who are trying to figure out what company to go with and what phones to buy.
Well, the average consumer isn't going to really know what in the world they're talking about when they say 3G coverage anyway.
Exactly.
They just want to know that they have service. Mm-hmm. So AT&T's complaint is that they never show actual coverage.
Service coverage areas.
Yeah, an actual service coverage map.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth visiting, say, YouTube or something to see some of the ads. One of the holiday ads that just came out recently shows a phone that looks sort of like the iPhone on the island of Misfit Toys.
Oh, yeah. I saw this.
Out of the Christmas cartoon, and they're asking why the little fella is there on the island, and he basically throws up his little 3G coverage map, and they're like, oh, you'll fit in just perfectly around here. So it's not pointing at AT&T by no means, but at the same time, it looks like an iPhone, so everybody can kind of figure out what that gig is about.
Right. Yeah, that seems to, they're starting to bully AT&T a little bit here, it seems like.
Yeah, and it kind of makes, Verizon's been talking over the past year saying that, well, they're going to get the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And with these commercials about the map for this, and
there's a map for that.
Yeah,
there's an app for that. Mm-hmm.
Which, if anybody's seen the Apple commercials, there's an app for that.
Yes.
Same premise. And seeing as how they're going against Apple about the AT&T coverage, and then their Droid ads, that just came out as far as applications and processes that the new Motorola Droid phone can do as opposed to the iPhone. It doesn't seem like they're going to probably get that iPhone.
Probably not. Speaking of Droid, running the Google mobile system, Google is coming out with its Chrome operating system soon. Should be about this week. It was supposed to come out earlier, but there have been some problems coming up with hardware drivers for your hardware devices, and that's a critical component to all of this, you know, release of a lot of operating systems, and for whatever reason, Google has had trouble coming up with those to add to the package. You know, really, I think it's going to end up leaving things up to your computer to install those for you rather than having Chrome do it. And Chrome isn't going to come out and just poof work on every computer. Somehow it's only going to work on certain computers. I think they have agreements with Asus and Acer and some other companies. So it's not like you can download this and it'll just work. I don't really understand what it's supposed to do. Is it supposed to replace like Windows?
That's kind of what I'm getting the idea of, but then at the same time, there's actually netbooks coming out right now with the Android platform that's running on the Droid and other Google phones, so I'm not quite sure what the difference is.
Mm.
It's a little strange that they're going into the software and operating system business. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I thought it was weird enough when they came out with the browser. Now they're coming out with an OS. I'm wondering if is it specifically geared toward cloud-based activity or not?
That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably supposed to compete and hopefully kill off the Windows Mobile platform or Windows CE, like runs on the HumanWare product we had talked about.
Yeah, and I've heard that more and more cell phones are going to start using Droid, the Android package. Samsung, for instance, is supposed to start using it, and within a couple of years, only about 20% of the phones they release are going to be running Windows Mobile. So I'm kind of wondering, what's the difference between Chrome and this Android?
I'm not really sure. Maybe it just gives better support for computer hardware.
Maybe.
That's out there. Not sure. I don't think there's a whole lot of information on the Chrome OS yet.
Another thing that Google is releasing that there's not a lot of information on is the Speedy protocol. Google is developing a new internet protocol called Speedy, S-P-D-Y. What I can't understand is whether they're trying to replace the HTTP protocol that's generally used nowadays, or whether it's designed to work with and supplement the HTTP protocol. If you read the article, it's kind of ambiguous. It seems like it's designed to supplement it. Speedy, it's designed to make things faster, make web pages load a little smoother. A lot of the article was really kind of high tech for me, but that's what I understood from this. Google has not released this yet. It's apparently they've just designed a prototype web server and they're running further tests on it. So it'll be interesting to track the development of this protocol and see to what extent it usurps HTTP or if it just is going to run in the background someplace.
Yeah, I haven't really heard that much about this either. It sort of fits in that category of what in the world are they thinking?
Exactly.
I don't know whether it's supposed to replace HTML or compete with HTML5 that's coming out and the specs are working on. It's one of those that's Google's got a grand scheme. Google has a grand scheme, and we'll just have to wait around for what that could be.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes the way they do things, you kind of wonder where they're going.
Yeah, and things like Google Voice, you wonder, okay, well, why are they starting a phone service? But then it's slowly evolving into maybe they're going to pursue being a phone company even.
Kind of like Skype. It seems like they bought Gizmo 5, didn't they?
Yes, which is just like Skype. I've used it a little bit. It's a little bit more clunky than Skype seems to be, a lot less polished, but you're able to interface with some different protocols, like the SIP networks that are used, say, on Cisco voice over IP phones, things like that.
Oh, hmm. Well, there was a toss-up as to whether eBay or Google was going to buy it, and apparently Google bought it for $30 million, something like that.
Yeah, it's going to allow them to interface with Google Wave to actually give you a method for making phone calls from your Google Wave number over the internet, just like you would with Skype or Vonage or some of those other services out there.
I see. Well, not a good segue into this next story.
No, not a whole lot. other than innovative advertising could be fitting with Google. Volvo is working on a new Volvo car called the S60. And it is not going to come out until early to mid 2010 at some German auto show. But in order to draw press information about this, they are getting a Turkish painter who is blind to actually paint the car, or paint a model of the car that will be used at the auto show, which is quite interesting. They've even released the information on their Facebook fan page, so if anyone wants more information about that,
Have you seen a picture of the car?
They just showed like a small little, it's kind of like a little 2 and 4 door car, you know, just a regular.
No, I mean a picture of his painting of the car.
No, it's still in development. They're even talking about having him paint portions of cars if people request certain designs or something.
Wow.
So it's an interesting technique to get their name out there.
That's really quite an accomplishment. I mean, he's been blind since birth, and so have I, and I can't even imagine trying to paint something.
Yeah, that'd be a sight.
Well, evidently there are some blind people out there who can make a reasonably good job of it.
Yeah,
because
evidently
they're asking him to do it. So I'd love it when the picture, you know, if it comes out, to be able to know, well, how good it is.
Yeah, I think it's still in the works.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of showed a picture of just what the car looked like and that he would be painting this, but they haven't released a picture yet.
And it's also
most likely they'll be doing it on their Facebook page.
Yeah, it's also interesting that they're going to put it on their Facebook page. So many companies have fan pages now, and Facebook is just growing so much in that way.
Yes, and even doing like live video and things. I saw an article just a few minutes ago that was talking about the pop artist Shakira is going to release her latest video or something on Facebook.
Yeah, apparently she's going to release it on Ustream, and then it's going to, I guess, stream to Facebook somehow and onto her fan page.
It's in conjunction with Ustream.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we'll see how good the infrastructure of Facebook and Ustream are.
Yeah. Interesting. Facebook is not only serving as a vehicle for pop stars to release their new videos, but it is also serving to exonerate criminals, or at least it appears to be moving in that direction. A 19-year-old boy from Brooklyn, from New York City, was accused of taking part in a robbery. And he was exonerated because his attorney found an update to his Facebook status that was posted at the time of the robbery from his father's apartment. And they got Facebook to release information about that status update, not only, of course, who posted it, but what IP address it was, so that they could connect the IP address to, you know, the place of the post and determine that it was from his father's apartment. And because of this, he was exonerated. The charges against him were dropped.
Well, the charges were dropped, but I believe he still spent like 19 days in Rikers Island prison because of it until they could actually resolve the issue. So he didn't get off too free.
No, but they resolved the issue, and from what I understand, he was not formally convicted of the charges.
No, no, he wasn't.
Yeah,
he was cleared. He was cleared of the charges, but it sort of makes the question of, okay, how far is social networking actually going to go now?
Right. There's a big debate on this in the legal community. Some experts are a little worried that it's going too far too fast. It's been used to disprove alibis and to kind of pile up evidence against people in criminal cases, but it's never been used as, you know, I guess almost the sole vehicle for dismissing criminal charges against people. Now, maybe there was more to the story than we know, but from what it appears, I mean, the charges were dropped based simply on this piece of evidence. And in general, with cases like this, courts don't really give social networking types of evidence that much weight.
Well, and one thing that really has to be concerning to Facebook users is the fact that Facebook was quick to turn over all IP information and data related to this user's account to the authorities just quickly, you know, with not a lot of questions asked, or at least people are wondering if there were a lot of proper documentation requested when it comes to privacy. You know, if the police can just request information at a drop of the hat and Facebook is going to give it over, then
yeah,
where does that leave privacy and security?
Good question. And we not only have to be worried about security on the internet, but we have to worry about security in our everyday lives too. A recent report on the most dangerous cities in the U.S. caught a lot of people by surprise, including myself. And I think we're going to mention this here because we're located in one of these dangerous cities.
Yes, and I can attest to how bad it looks. they did a study of 360 metropolitan areas in the United States between the years of 2007-2008. And they looked at data collected by the Surface Transportation Policy Partnership, which is evidently a data sorting company, and they looked at pedestrian safety in various cities. Well, they came up with a top 10 list, and not in any particular order. They did not specify 1 through 10, but the offending and scary places are Orlando, Florida, Tampa, Florida, Miami, Florida, and Jacksonville, Florida. Then it also involved Memphis, Tennessee, Louisville, Kentucky, Houston, Texas, Birmingham, Alabama, and Atlanta, Georgia. The one that concerns us the most is Raleigh, North Carolina, made it onto that list, which is where we are currently located.
Yeah, and what surprised me actually about this whole thing was that New York City wasn't on there. We hear all the time about how dangerous New York City is, and it wasn't on this list.
I guess that's probably because people take the subway and buses and taxis
mm-hmm.
most of the time and do not actually drive themselves.
Yeah, but it still does have a lot of pedestrian traffic. At least it seemed like it would.
Yes, and the safest cities in America are Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, and Minneapolis, St. Paul. So I think I need to move.
I think we should. We should move to Seattle. Then it would rain 9 months of the year and we'd be depressed the whole time. Oh, wait.
Well,
how is that different from normal life?
or we could get treated at Seattle Grays.
There you go. I think that wraps up all the serious content we had for this evening. I would like to end with a funny little product that I found on referenced in the Fred's Head companion blog and is sold at independent living aids, although I think you can probably find it just about anywhere. It is the Giggling Elmo Hot Tomato Game. I guess it's similar to Mr. Hot Potato game that you...
You mean the hot potato where you
yeah, the hot
the
potato,
potato around.
Yeah, I guess it's similar to the hot potato game that you would play when you were little. And this is just the shape of a plush little tomato with Elmo's face on it, and if you press his nose, then he starts to giggle, and the kids pass him around, and Whoever, you know, holds him last is out. And somehow integrated into this is a group of cards with letters, numbers, and categories on them that you have to call out while the thing is being passed around. And I'm not sure how they all fit in, but anyway, a new addition to the toy market.
Yes, and it requires 2 AA batteries, not included.
Not included. I'm not sure of the price on this thing, but it shouldn't be more than whatever Mr. Hot Potato thing is selling for. I don't know why I want to put a Mr. in front of it. I think it's because I'm thinking of Mr. Potato Head.
Yes, it's Mr. Potato Head, the one with the movable ears and eyes and nose.
Crazy. Well, that about wraps it up for us today, I think. Unless you have any other nuggets of wisdom to add at the end.
No, I do not believe so. I can't really top a Elmo giggling ball.
Yes. Well, anyway... I will mention really quickly before we actually wrap this up that next week is the Thanksgiving holiday, and we will not have a regular newscast that week, but there will be, I will upload a demonstration to the feed dealing with ways in which we coordinate material for this podcast. So if any of you are interested in that, it'll be in next week's feed.
And that will be for Sunday, November 22nd.
Exactly. And finally, thanks very much for listening. Have a great week. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.